Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin Be'ez Hashem, Shalom Bayis, Shir number 532. There's a chapter in Witwersky's book on marriage that talks about raising children. And this is a big yesod in marriage, because raising children the right way helps in Shalom Bayis overall. And Shalom Bayis helps raise the children. The idea, as we always said, is one of the greatest things you could do for your children is the gift you give to each other. The love and respect you have for each other is the biggest matana and the biggest sense of security that a child could have. When he sees that his parents, his mother and father, love each other, respect each other, and also are on the same page pertaining to rearing him. They could have differences of opinion, but overall, he sees or she sees, the child sees, that there's a no lack of a congruent approach. There is a constant approach, right? But Ben Sarah Meyritz says that if they don't speak in one voice, he can't be condemned. Now, it's almost impossible to happen with the same voice, but that concept being that for parents to have the best ultimate chinuch to avoid this problem is to have the same one voice. Very little difference of opinion between the two. And if they do, they work it through, and then they choose to do it. Now, this book is just one chapter on this. He recommends a few books. There's a book called Positive Parenting. Rabbi Witwersky co-authored with someone, Dr. Ursula Schwartz, who is an excellent child psychologist. He also recommends a book called Make Me, Don't Break Me by Moshe Ganz, the Sarah publication. And then there's another book that he says the title is How to Talk So That the Kids Will Listen and How to Listen So That the Kids Will Talk by someone, Faber and Maslisch, Avon Books. So the idea of parental influence is what we just said, modeling. Children may or may not do what you tell them to do, but they're more likely to emulate what they see you do. Midos, very often, proper midos are dependent on the parents themselves. The children are most apt to adopt the midos that they see in their parents. If a child sees a parent lose control, lose their temper, then all the lecturing at home and all your rage and temper tantrums to discipline your child will be nothing. If the child sees bickering and discord between the mother and father, and neither one bends to the other, the children themselves will have difficulty adapting to the needs and wants of the others. If the children observe selfishness in the parents, they are likely to be selfish. If you want your children to be honest and truthful, show them truth. Show them honesty. They don't distinguish between white lies and lies of other colors. Parents may not realize that they may be modeling unhealthy behaviors for their children. Never underestimate young children. They are very, very perceptive. Because their minds have not yet been cluttered with the extra material of an adult mind, they are extremely sensitive. He says exquisitely sensitive, much more than the most advanced lie detector. Try putting anything over them. It's not going to work. Be truthful and straightforward. They see a lot more than you think they see. Children were not asked to be brought to the world, and doing so by bringing them into the world places an enormous responsibility on a father and a mother. Some mothers complain, I don't know what to do for my child. He's not happy or she's not happy. You can't give your children happiness. You can give them just the best shot of happiness. And a big primary way to give them a shot in happiness is your own healthy behaviors. He says something here as follows. I'm going to just quote him now. Listen carefully. In my work of treating adolescents who have become drug abusers, parents regularly ask what they can do to prevent their children from using drugs. I tell them that many youngsters turn to drugs to seek pleasure as a substitute for happiness they lack. In a home where each parent primarily seeks gratification of their own needs, children grow up with a feeling that such gratification is a goal in life. And in a home where truly spiritual principles prevail, children are apt to adapt similar attitudes and thereby decreasing that pleasure-seeking drive. Now, I want to make a very strong disclaimer here. I know many wonderful parents that are much better than me in my parenting. I don't come to their toenails. And they have issues with their kids having drug issues, whatever it is. So there's no way you can judge. It could very likely be very often that a parent could be ideal and still this takes place. And I'm extremely aware of that. One has to be extremely sensitive about that. One cannot make such judgments just because they hear or they know of a family that has a child that has these type of problems, to assume that their parents failed them or failed them or did something or didn't behave properly is absolutely wrong. And it's very often sheker and very often lashon hara. Maitzi shemra, because it's false. But nevertheless, in some instances, it could be true. And again, it's not a matter of pointing fingers at others. It's about looking at ourselves and to see what we can do to improve. Then he goes into a chapter which is about, he gives different stories, but the idea being is to work through things. And here is one example of being overly attached to one's parents. And this is very true. This I've heard scenarios in more than one occasion where the wife has a father that she very, very hush of a father, maybe even a paisek, that the wife as a daughter worshipped her father. And it was a healthy thing at that point, maybe, you know, a kibbutz of an aim and all that. But it comes with serious problems. One has to be very careful. So here's a case, Ezra and Adina, case that Adina was very attached to her mother and also worshipped her father. She married someone, calling here Ezra. She said she loved Ezra, but she took it for granted that Ezra would share in the admiration of her father and be totally mevatel himself to her father. Now, halacha says that the wife abides with the minhagim of the husband, but that was not, it was unthinkable to Adina that she should change her minhagim. Anyone who said anything different than her father did or did something was simply wrong in her mind. So although Ezra loved Adina, he did not see himself as being just a mere appendage to her family. And whenever Ezra did anything slightly different from the way her father did, Adina used to criticize him and berate him. She eventually lost all respect for Ezra. And Adina would not consider counseling because there was nothing negotiable. Suggesting that she respects Ezra's menhagim was like asking her to convert to another religion. And needless to say, their child was born into a broken home. So here you have an intensity of a daughter, Adina's attachment to her family, and she refused to even consider a marriage counselor. That created a churban. So one has to be very, very careful with those type of scenarios. You have another scenario also where a husband had a hero worship for his older brother. Wouldn't do anything without consulting his older brother. And to an excessive way. And the wife felt threatened by it and also felt it was an unhealthy relationship to be totally dependent on it. Not that the husband was a bad person, just an immature person that at a young age, he was 21. But here they were saved because the husband had a great respect for his Rosh Hashiva and the wife made an appointment with the Rosh Hashiva and explained the problem. And the Rosh Hashiva talked to the husband and in a very gentle way pointed out to him that this attitude in marriage was not proper, not al pi Torah. And Fishel, who was the husband, accepted the Rosh Hashiva's hadracha and detached from his older brother. And with a certain couple of months of counseling, they turned around their marriage and they have now a very beautiful, happy marriage. Then there's things that are misunderstandings. Now, you think this may happen only early in marriage, but it could happen even after 15, 20 years in marriage and beyond. But here's a case where they're married for 6 months. Everything's going smoothly. And one day he finds his wife in tears. What happened? And she starts crying. It's nothing. It's nothing. And she says, "You're not crying over nothing. Tell me what's wrong." And she said, "My sister's wedding, whatever it is, 2 weeks away, and I don't have a dress for the wedding." So the husband says, "No, no reason to cry. In 2 weeks, there's plenty of time to get a dress." And then she says as follows, listen carefully. This is what's really bothering her. My father would always ask my mother well in advance whether she had an address for an event. And you didn't even think of it. You weren't considerate of my feelings. Now, he answered back very wisely. He says, you're right. But please remember this. When you were old enough to observe your father asking your mother whether she had a dress, your parents must have been married for at least 6, 7, 8 years. We're only married for a year. When we're married longer, I'll know such things also. But we've been only married a year or 6 months or however long we were married. I never had a wife before, so there are things I need to learn. And she calmed down, and she said, you're right. It's silly of me not to think of that. So you see here that the dress was not the issue, that he didn't ask about the dress earlier than 2 weeks. What was she really hurt by? Nothing to do with the dress, because she deeply felt that her husband was not being sensitive to her needs. She just needed to realize that it takes a while. It takes a while for a husband or a wife to learn about each other's needs. He says it's important to keep in mind in the first year. Frankly, it's something that's important to keep in mind every year and all the time. All the time. So that's a very, very important insight. Again, like we said, and here finally Rabbi Twersky does bring it about, that even though his book is titled The First Year of Marriage, he has a chapter called Until 120, and he emphasizes it's not limited to year one. In fact, such effort must be increased after the first year and even stronger. And even stronger. Because what happens is as children arrive and as the husband becomes more involved in supporting the family and the couple's time together is progressively more and more limited and there's a tremendous amount of distractions that could take a husband and wife in two different directions. And there could be a diluting of their intimacy. And that has to be avoided. One has to work extremely hard to avoid that. Too often a husband and wife may spend quality time only when on vacation. That's a bidyeved. On other times, the relationship may only happen when they are free from other functions. Also a bidyeved. In other words, the daily activities may encroach on the time they have together. Therefore, it's necessary to schedule time together. In other words, when they decide to designate, this night we'll both be home. It's been hectic. We've been going to chasnas. We've been running around. We'll settle the kids in early. We'll figure out a way, and we will have a lot of private time. Sometimes mealtime can be a private time. Sometimes it's not shaykh when you have young kids, but very often it can be. In some relationships, you could learn together. Shabbos, review a parsha together, other Torah writings. For some people, that works. The marriage relationship is often taken for granted. Just like your lawn needs upkeep to eliminate the weeds, same holds for marriage. He ends off this part of the book, and then he goes into another venue that we're going to talk about with this letter. He writes a letter, and it's to newlyweds, but people who are married a long time really need to understand this too. May Hashem bless you with a happy marriage and much nachas together for 120 years. And then he's going to talk about circumstances resulting second marriages, which we're going to go into a little bit here. And he said, don't put the book away. Go back to page one and reread it. The Ramchal and Mesillas Yesharim recommends rereading it many times because he discussed things that are generally known, people tend to take them for granted and may not give them serious consideration. Therefore, rereading it is necessary to keep the important guidelines in our minds. Much the same is said about everything you read here. The guidelines for a true happy marriage may appear so obvious that we assume that we are already implementing them. But my clinical experience tells me that this is often not true. We need constant reminding of what makes a happy marriage. And may Hashem bless your marriage with Gila, Rina, Ditza, Chedva, Ava, Achva, Shalom, Vereus. And then he talks about what he's going to talk about in the next chapter, which is regarding second marriages. But the bottom line of all this is, and again, just to reiterate with the Shiurim, is the same idea. A lot of it is new ideas, but a lot of it is chazara of the old. We need that. That is crucial. The real change is with review and internalizing things that we may already know, but we have to learn how to implement and internalize. Bracha v'atzlacha.